I can't give you all of my mind. It would fail you in good time. I will offer you this hug before the taking is the one good part.
7 out of 10 proctologists recommend listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Something not so easy to see. No strings attached, but it's yours for free.
Why did you play that bumper?
Because it reminds me of you.
We've got an incredibly famous Nashvillean rock star dude that we're about to interview, and you've got to play the proctologist bumper?
I just want to let him know what he's in for.
You're such an idiot. Folks, you're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. Tim the Tool, Drew Marshall, here for 4 hours. Like a bad rash.
Or the Tool, as I now call it.
Yeah.
The Tool.
Nice little email from who was that again? Bruce. Where's he from again?
No, it wasn't Bruce. Bruce was the one who was angry.
Oh, yeah, this was a Twitter.
Yeah.
A tweet. Anyway, listen, Phil Madeira has always marched to the beat of a different drum, so he'd fit in right real well. Right real well? I think I'm from the South.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
With us. So it's no surprise that this award-winning musician and songwriter prefers his God a little differently than most. In his first book, ladies and gentlemen, God on the Rocks, ladies and gentlemen. I seem to be saying that a lot lately, and I'm sorry to everyone, all you ladies and gentlemen. God on the Rocks, Phil shares personal, emotional, and sometimes devastating stories along with his roaming faith journey. Check out this quote. I prefer the filtered version of God's voice as I do my whiskey. You see, that was the part right there that got me, you know, you had me at whiskey. I let the message age a while in a warm oak cask, my ears worn down by the blues, smoothed by the rough edges of angular voices, listen with acquired wisdom and a need to listen twice before interpreting. Phil Madeira is playing in the background. Have a wee listen. Well, folks, Phil Madeira is a musician, songwriter, producer, and singer. He's performed or collaborated with major recording artists like Alison Krauss, Elvis Costello, Phil Keaggy, Amy Grant, Garth Brooks, Toby Keith, The Civil Wars, and many more. He's currently a member of Emmy Lou Harris's band, the Red Dirt Boys, and the creator of the album Mercyland, Hymns for the Rest of Us. PhilMadeira.net is the website. The last name is spelled M-A-D-E-I-R-A, PhilMadeira.net, and the book, of course, is what he's here to chat with us about. Phil, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Maybe the longest introduction I've ever given anyone. You better live up to this huge, huge thing.
Well, it was great, especially the proctology part.
Yeah, Tim likes playing that. So quite a journey, quite a road. I just got off the phone with a guy named Ted Decker, who's an author. He's written some pretty interesting things, and he's sort of a wandering autodidactic iconoclast. And I'm wondering if you are sort of that same pain in the butt that we might be.
You know, I don't even know what that last phrase meant. Well, I was second to last. Pain in the butt, I completely identify with that, but the iconoclastic thing, you know, I honestly was the third born of three kids, and I'm way into birth order. I totally buy into the, you know, if you've read any birth order books.
Yeah.
So being the baby of the family, I just was sort of cut out to believe in my dreams and all that stuff, and just kind of chart a different course than my siblings did. You know, my sister, who's fabulous, is a minister's wife in Massachusetts. My brother's he's a CEO of a museum out on the West Coast. You know, they both have fairly
boring lives.
Yeah, you know, and here I am. And what can I say? So, yeah, the iconoclast thing, I mean, I've always been a little different, but...
So, let's get the journey thing out of the way here before we need to talk about the most important aspect of this, and that is the whiskey side of things. your journey... you know, it was a sort of typical American Bible Belty kind of grew up in the Christian home, and you know, did the flannel board presentations of Jesus and the sheep and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I haven't heard the term flannel board. Actually, you know what? I'm old enough where what they actually called it was in our, they called it a flannel graph.
Flannel graph, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
That's scary.
Yeah, so, I mean, they had, and the other thing that my now deceased friend Tom Howard, in fact, I wrote a chapter about Tom Seth in the book, but my old friend Tom Howard and I both had in common that our youth groups were referred to, they called it, you know, are you going to young people's?
Young people's, that's young, right, yeah.
You know, and it's just like, what the hell is this? Young people's? Who came up with this? And really, and when you look back, why should you ever trust anyone who came up with a phrase like young people's?
No, no. Well, it's ironic that someone so old would be responsible for coming up with that phrase. It must have been someone old. Young people's. Holy heart attack.
I know. Right.
Okay, so when did things go south for you? Like, you know, because you don't have a typical good little Jesus boy story. You don't.
Well, you know, the thing is that what's really interesting about, you know, it depends what part went south, because honestly, I have believed in Jesus since a very, very young age. I mean, extremely young age. And I have actually never not believed since that point. Now, that being said, I'm happy to, you know, throw my ire in Christ's direction, happy to GD everything that moves, you know. But funny enough, so that part didn't go south, but I think, you know, life, I mean, everyone's life, as sooner or later, every listener out there, their life at some juncture goes south. I mean, unless you have the perfect life, which, I mean, who does?
Me.
So for me, oh well, that's awesome. God bless you, God.
God bless you, God.
For me, you know, I just, I think, you know, for me, it was just realizing, wow, you know, I mean, every church, because I started my musical journey in Christian music, you know, I wound up going to every kind of church there was and just really found it quite harmful and discouraging. And, you know, it's kind of like Groucho's thing. I'd never be a member of any club that didn't have me as a member,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, honestly, I mean, apart from the fact that, you know, my marriage failed after 25 years, and not in a big scandalous way, it just, you know, it just failed. Apart from those kinds of things, which are very typical, I've had this awesome and continue to have gratefully an awesome life, but life happens, you know, and you just, you know, we grow up with these ideas about like hell is a big one. I, you know, that's a mind blowing idea to me. And so if anything has gone south, maybe it's not even the right term for where it's gone, because I just feel like...
But, Phil, maybe you're just... I'm relating to too much of this. So when I say this to you, please understand, this is coming at me more than it is at you. But maybe you're just a selfish, spoiled, youngest child who has worked and schemed to justify and rationalize anything and everything to get what you want, including your theology.
Well, you know, that's probably, actually, it's great to hear that, because that, I'm sure that, you know, I'd like to think that my book will fall into the hands of somebody who will criticize me that way, because usually that helps book sales. And I think you're probably partially right, you know, and that is, I mean, I am doing what, I mean, I think the only thing at the end of the day we do is we either believe something someone has told us, or we believe something that we've kind of pieced together on our own. And hopefully we're honest about, you know, hopefully it's not just hopefully it's not complete self-absorption that makes us believe the things we believe. But I think it's partially that on everyone's part. I mean, I just think, you know, convenience does dictate a lot of things. And
I'm sorry, did you just say thangs?
Did I? I don't know, man. Thanks, that is really great. You're hilarious. Well, yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Let's talk about some of the oldies but goodies.
All right. Like
I haven't been into the Jesus music scene for decades, ever since Hillsong destroyed it for me. Well, even earlier than that. But I, you know, back in the day, I really absorbed a lot of Larry Norman and a lot of Randy Stonehill. Randy and I are still buddies. Larry gave me a beautifully, you know, hour and a half long interview, and he wasn't in a bad mood that day, so he gave me a nice long interview.
That was the day.
But you know, I want to throw down, you know, like a Phil Keaggy, but Mark Hurd. I mean, there's a troubled soul, man, and I like the way Mark put together songs, because it wasn't, you know, rainbows and Skittles coming out of his butt, right?
Yeah, Mark was an interesting guy, super conflicted. So one of the angriest people. When Mark had his heart attack, I was like, no kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
He had a heart attack.
Right.
And Mark actually may have also been one of those folks that would be described, as you were asking me if I would describe myself, and the whole, you know. Mark was definitely. He wanted it his way, for sure, you know. But I always liked Mark's music. But I also thought, you know, even, I mean, when I had a career in Christian music, which I gratefully found my way out of, with all deference to people who embraced me in those days, I didn't know I'd be on a Christian publisher. It's just the way, I mean, thank God it's a left-wing Christian publisher. But, you know, I bristle against most Christian media as well, and Mark even more so than I. But funny enough, with Mark, I was always, so get the hell out of there, man. You know, why do you keep taking their money? You know, and so I, you know, and maybe perhaps if Mark had lived, he would have, you know, he would have
worked some of that stuff out.
Or just worked elsewhere.
Right.
You know, not necessarily worked it out, but worked elsewhere, which is, you know, I mean, I remember the day for me, 1988, I was in the Bluebird Cafe. I had been in Christian music for 12 years. I had been in Nashville for, I think at that time, 5 or 6 years. I went to the Bluebird, and I was hearing a band play. They were called the Kingsnakes. It was Kenny Greenberg playing guitar and a guy named Mike Henderson playing guitar, and then a bass and drummer. And Mike Henderson's blues playing, all of a sudden I remember, oh, this is who you were before, you know, before you got into Christian music. This is what you did, writing songs, just blues songs and stuff. And, you know, and that's when I remember determining, okay, you got to find your way out.
Yeah.
And ironically, after that time, probably my greatest success as a writer in the Christian field came to me, but while I was still trying to figure out how to get out, eventually I met Buddy Miller, funny enough, the day after Mark Hurd's memorial service in L.A. I was out there playing a gig with Keaggy, and he and my dear friend Lynn Nichols and I went to Mark's service, and Buddy and Julie Miller sang, and I was like, who the hell are these people? And then the next day we were playing at some festival in the mountains of Riverside, California, or some, I didn't even know where it was. All I knew was that we had requested a 6-pack or 12-pack of Guinness, and there it was at this Christian festival. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And Buddy Miller came into our dressing room for something and saw Guinness, and he was like, oh, wow, can I have one of those? It's like, you know, it's just so fun in the Christian world, you know, a beer. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Wow. And so it was like, oh, I like this guy. Well, then I wound up joining Buddy's band and really making my escape. And then And eventually that led to joining Emmy Lou's band. And it's, you know, and I'm actually calling you from a recording studio today because I'm producing a record for some buddies of mine that I went to a Christian college with many, many years ago.
Which one was that?
Taylor University.
Oh, yeah.
In Indiana. In fact, one of the guys here is from Windsor, Ontario. And before I got on the phone with you, I said, coach me, man. I forgot how to say oak.
Oh, really? Really?
No, he just reminded me not to say fang.
Yeah, don't say thang. And can you just say to your buddy from Windsor that on the behalf of the rest of us from Canada, we're sorry he's from the armpit of Ontario, okay?
Oh, that's funny. I'll tell him you said that. That's awesome.
I mean, it's right across the river from Detroit. That's where all their garbage flows, right? So.
Well, I know exactly
man.
Where it is.
All right, so let's do some goofy radio questions here. If you were stuck and limited and on a desert island with one instrument, and for some reason you had electricity as well, would it be the Hammond B3? Would it be harp, blues harp, guitar, lap steel, accordion, dobro, or some kind of percussion instrument? Because apparently, Mr. Dick Van Dyke of music, you play all of those.
Well, honestly, it would be an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. That to me, guitar is my love. You know, I love playing guitar.
What is your favorite axe?
Well, I've got a 1952 Gibson CF100 acoustic guitar. That's probably it's between that and a 53 Southern Jumbo, Gibson Southern Jumbo. You know, I like old wood. What can I say?
Yeah. So. Never mind. There's a joke there.
Yeah,
okay. So there's a guy named Randy Bachman who was with BTO, Guess Who, you know, taking care of business. And he has got one of the most ridiculous guitar collections in a sealed, hermetically sealed, you know, humidified vault on the island of Vancouver or somewhere. I don't know, somewhere off. And I could tell you where it is, but not to kill you. Tell me about the one guitar you'd love to get your grubby hands on.
Gosh, you know, I mean, probably I wouldn't mind having a 64 Strat.
Right.
You know, and which is not, I mean, that's not unattainable. It's just, I don't feel like spending $12,000 on a car, never mind a guitar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
you know,
I like drums. I mean, I collect old Ludwig drums. You know, stuff like that. So I like it all.
Speaking of blues harps, which we sort of were, I made the jump from Hohner to the other brand whose name I can't remember right now. Because
they must be awesome.
Yeah, I'm just so in love with them. They're just awesome. I am endorsing them.
Is it the one that Buffalo Norton guy plays? What are they called? I know what you're talking about.
Oscar. Less Oscars or something like that, isn't that it?
Lee
Oscars. Frig, yeah. I don't know. You know what? I'm worried that I'm gonna. And you might be the same thing. You know, your dad got the Alzheimer's. I'm worried about getting Alzheimer's. I think it's already setting in. How about you?
Who is this, and what are we talking about?
Well, didn't your dad get Alzheimer's?
Yeah, it was a joke. Who is this, and what are? We
oh
talking
my
about?
Goodness! Oh my goodness! Hilarious. He did not that's just right. do that.
He did it, and you're the one that says, I don't pay attention.
That,
I totally got it.
That never
nice
happens.
Nice going, Phil.
Never. That's 10 years of interviews. That has never happened, dude.
I do worry about I don't know if I worry about it, but I certainly know that getting Alzheimer's is possible. I mean, it's, you know, my dad had it for really about 15 years, and it was heartbreaking because my father was so great. It was so weird to be forgotten by this person who really taught me how to love. I mean, my dad, as the book clearly, you know, states, is my hero. I adore my father. And to have him in that state where I hated seeing him because I was afraid that my memory of him would be that
yeah.
most recent thing. And, of course, it was not, you know. I mean, I remember such wonderful things about him. But Man, I wish they'd find a cure. My brother and I used to have a pact that whoever got it first, the other one had to kill him. So, but then there are so many reasons that we could kill each other anyhow. It doesn't matter. So I fully expect not to die of Alzheimer's, but just to pissing off my brother.
Did you your mom and my dad do the same thing? They both read the obituaries.
That's funny. That's very funny. Yeah.
But my dad's a funeral director, so he does it from a professional point of view,
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I get that. It's like you or me. It's like you reading Variety, right?
Yes, that's exactly it. Let's do some name dropping here. Civil Wars, boy, have they ever come onto the scene with a little bit of how's she going, a little bit of fame and fortune dropping at their feet. They're doing quite well, those two.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. They, the song that they recorded on my Mercyland record, which is called From This Valley, is actually on their new record, which I think comes out in August. But no one's really sure what's going on with them. It doesn't sound like they're really ever going to do anything together again, but they're putting this record out. And so their whole, they were, mercurial, is that the word? They just went through the roof in no time at all. And then, now there's not much happening there between the two of them, I guess.
Interesting. But, interesting. Okay, yeah. Let's do this cheesy interview thing. Give me a description, maybe one word if you can, or at least a short thing. Don't rattle on too much about these people. You ready?
Yeah.
This is the name dropping part of the Phil Madeira interview. Alison Krauss.
I'm sorry, I can't just go one word. The one voice a songwriter wants to hear singing their song.
Nice. Toby Keith.
Fun.
Isn't he Red Solo Cup guy? Now, who wrote that? Yeah, it's him, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Ricky Skaggs. I've had him on the show. Boys, he is some serious conservative dude, man.
Yeah, that's true, man. That's true. I've never talked politics with him, and that's probably why he keeps cutting my songs. I would just say he's a mofo on the mandolin.
Okay. All right.
Am I okay saying this stuff? I have no idea.
Yeah, because anyone that doesn't know what it means would be the people that would complain, so it's fine.
Okay, well, there you go. All right.
Bruce Hornsby.
Oh, gosh, man. Bruce is... I've got to just quickly say this, if I can. He is so, he's such a master on the piano, so you imagine this very serious guy, and he's like more of a frat guy.
Really?
Really interesting guy, yeah. Sweetheart, yeah, right.
Keb Moe.
Keb Moe has stood me up for every meeting we've ever had. I love him, though. I love him.
Maybe that's what Keb Moe means in Greek.
Yeah, perhaps so.
Garth Brooks.
Oh, gosh. Savvy.
Savvy. Okay.
Oh yeah, that guy's a marketing genius. Yeah. Except for the record that I had a song on. That he was not a marketing genius on that one. Marketing moron on that one. God love him. But anyway.
Cindy Morgan. Yeah, and you can't say hot.
And what else can I say? Cindy Morgan is just one of my closest friends.
Mm-hmm. So. There's so many. This is going to get boring to people who don't care, but there's so many more cool name-dropping scenarios we could do. Let's just finish with Emmylou Harris.
Oh, Emmy is just regal. Yeah, regal. Fantastic. I love Emmy. She's been a great boss and a great friend.
You've got to just be filled with stories, and you have poured these stories out, of course, in this book, Legendary Nashville Songwriter Mixes Whiskey and Faith in Spiritual Memoir. Phil Madeira, of course, sharing stories of roaming relationship with faith and religion in God on the Rocks. I don't read many books throughout the year. But this is one I will actually pick up and give it a go. If it sucks, I'll get you. I'll send you an email. But man,
well, thank you so much. I you know, I'm just kind of astounded that anyone has read it, and I keep hearing from people who, I mean, it is hitting a chord with a lot of folks. Funny enough, folks who, you know, a lot of folks who grew up religious really totally get it, because to be able to grow up religious and veer away from a lot of what you learned but still have faith is a remarkable thing for a lot of those folks. But funny enough, I played the Station Inn the other night, which is a, you know, local club here in town, and our front of house guy, who works mostly with Bela Fleck, he was in the audience, and he brought a copy of the book. I mean, he's not a guy I identify with faith at all. And he just said, man, I'm loving this. And so for him, it was a neat thing. Like, he particularly referenced a chapter about how we view God, and that chapter is called The Chick Upstairs. And, you know, so I just feel like there's something for everybody. You know, I'm certainly not trying to convert anybody. I'm just talking, which is what I probably shouldn't do so often.
No, listen, on our show, man, this is a perfect book for our show. I mean, we just interviewed a guy who wrote a book called Skeptical Believer, Telling Stories to Your Inner Atheist. We interviewed him every Saturday in the month of June. You know, we embrace messiness, and from what I understand, you know how to spell that word as well.
Hey, man, I'll talk to you anytime. This has been like a total pleasure, and you know, definitely love communicating with my cousins up in the North Country there. So I'd love to interview again. You're fabulous, man. You're fantastic. So
thank
really fun.
Stop. Don't stop.
No.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate your guts.
Absolutely. You too.
All right. Take care, man. Phil Madera on the Drew Marshall Show. PhilMadera.net is the website. Another guy, kindred spirit, messy soul. Stay with us. Hey folks, it's that time of year again where every August and the first half of September we replay our most unforgettable interviews of the year, and our regular advertising partners love it because our listenership goes right through the roof. So now imagine me telling everyone about your charity, product, business, or special event, right alongside back-to-back celebrity interviews with the likes of Mark Burnett, the creator of Survivor, or Charlie's Angel, Cheryl Ladd, or the co-host of The Today Show, Kathy Lee Gifford, or Justin Bieber's mom, Patti Mollette. Pretty cool, huh? So here's the deal. We'll offer you 7 weeks of advertising, which includes me reading your 20-second commercial at least 5 times per show. And we'll place an advertisement banner on 4 of our most visited DrewMarshall.ca pages for 2 months. Now, all of this would typically cost about $1,300, but you get it for only $828 plus tax. That's a 35% savings. But wait, there's more. I've always wanted to say that. Don't forget that all our advertising during our 10th season gets an additional 10% off. So that's a 45% total savings. 7 weeks of radio advertising for only $745 plus tax. That's about $100 per week. Crazy. Anyway, this is your last chance to take advantage of our 10th anniversary discount pricing. And seriously, spaces are limited for our summer break special. So go to drewmarshall.ca and sign up today. No, like right now. Go now. Don't wait. Now. Seriously, right now. Oh, okay, now.